Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. As entrepreneurs, we tend to focus on building products and providing services. We have this tendency to think that if we create something valuable enough, customers will flood into the door. Yet we build stuff and we just hear crickets. SEO, or search engine optimization, is not only about getting visitors to your website, it's about getting people who are buyers to your website. Our customers go to Google when they want to solve a problem, and it's our job to make sure that we can be found. In today's episode, we're going to go deep into SEO to uncover what entrepreneurs need to know about SEO in 2017. From getting ranked quickly to what and how to create content, my guest even lays out the four steps to getting search engine traffic to a brand new e-commerce site. My guest is the chief of marketing at Ahrefs, an SEO software company and data-driven marketing toolsets. Now, let's go deep with Tim Solo. So it's been almost a month since I've moved my business from ConvertKit over to ActiveCampaign. ConvertKit did not give me the email automation that I wanted. It was just sending sequentially. And ActiveCampaign has completely transformed the way I use my business and the way I'm using email. I recently set up my other podcast, The Showrunner, that I run with CopyBlogger, the people over at CopyBlogger. We have a course over there and we set up a two-part, I think it's 18 email sequence that we're driving paid traffic to. And the visual display, the way you can sort of sequence your emails and build out like an email funnel visually, much like a mind map, but that's where your actual emails and who and the yes knows. It's brilliant. It has changed and transformed the way I've seen and am using email marketing. Companies that use email marketing automation, they see 53% higher conversions than those using traditional email marketing. And with the 400 to 500 people that have already gone through the Showrunner sequence that I was just talking about, I'm seeing these exact numbers myself, and it's kind of blowing me away. ActiveCampaign enables you to send perfectly timed messages in response to your customers' actions and behaviors, and it allows you to treat your contacts as unique individuals. With marketing automation, you can set up your campaigns to listen, learn, adapt, and respond, all based on your contacts' behaviors. It's super, super easy to use, and you don't need to hire consultants because you can set it up for yourself. Right now, you can sign up for a free 14-day free trial, no credit card needed. Plus, because you are a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, I've got you a couple special bonuses. A free migration service. So if you already have an email list over at another provider, ActiveCampaign will move you over for free. If you're just starting out now, this is not needed, but this is a great service. Plus, you're going to sign up today for a 14-day free trial. You're going to choose whatever monthly plan you want. You pay for the first month. ActiveCampaign will cover the second month. You get the second month absolutely free. Plus, you're going to get a free one-on-one strategy session with a platform consultant. You can use this during your free trial if you wish to just get jump-started right during that first 14 days. Start marketing smarter today. Get and convert more leads with ActiveCampaign. Your 14-day free trial with no credit card is waiting for you at activecampaign.com/hack. That's activecampaign.com/hack to get started today. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest all the way from Singapore. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me. I'm looking to kind of dig into some of your expertise here today. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So you told me that I let you see some of these questions beforehand. You said that some of them are tough and big questions. So we'll see. We're going to try and give people sort of an overview of what they need of SEO and then dive into some ways they can actionably sort of use it in 2017 for their businesses. So why don't we start with just sort of the 10,000 foot, like the overview of sort of what SEO is in general?
Okay. When I was saying that these are tough questions, I was meaning that they don't have any kind of straightforward step one, step two, step three answer. And they like imply a lot of it depends and all that stuff. So in terms of if we zoom out as much as we can and look at SEO right now, it's not what it used to be like 5 years ago. So 5 years ago, everyone was obsessed with like where to get links, how to find lists of sites that let you create links to your website, how to put keywords into your content, into your pages, how many of these keywords should you add, how many pages should you create on your site, and all these like very, very specific details. And people who knew these specifics, like where to get what, where to put what, they were banking hard. But right now it's not the case. Google is much more sophisticated. It's much more smart than that. So these days we almost don't have these like secret tips, secret tricks, secret numbers on what you should do on your website. And basically the 10,000 foot view is that, first of all, you should have something that people want, because SEO is based on demand. So people should know something and they should look for it in Google. So if they don't look in Google for your service, you won't get any traffic from Google. So the first thing is that you should make sure that people are looking for what you have there. The second thing is that whatever you have should be of a high quality. And the website where you present it should be of a high quality too, because Google right now is looking a lot at the behavioral, at the so-called behavioral factors. They didn't say it publicly. They didn't confirm it. But I'm pretty sure this will happen in the next few years. I mean, Google will say that they do look at this stuff. So basically, your product or your service and the website where you present it should be awesome, because Google is looking at how people react to your website. And the last thing, is that other people should link to you. Links still matter. So if you have an awesome website, if you have an awesome product, but no one in the internet is linking to your website, it's almost impossible to rank in Google, especially in the case where you have competitors who have tons of links from all kinds of sites. So this is the 10-foot view. Make sure that people are looking for what you have. Make what you have awesome and make the website awesome, and then do some promotion so that your website would have some links. This is the kind of, in a nutshell, what you should do.
Oh, I love it. I love it. See, that's a brilliant answer for it. So this idea, though, like you started how it wasn't what it used to be, which is the links and the keywords.
Yeah.
So for SEO, search engine optimization, you say somebody has to be searching for what it is you want, but not based on a keyword, more based on like a question or?
Yeah, it's kind of topic. I would say topic, because right now I see the content around keyword research. Before that, it was focused on like cherry picking some interesting keywords to rank for. But right now the advice is shifting to suggesting people to focus on topics instead. And quite recently, we had an article on Ahrefs' blog about keyword research, about ways to find keywords that people are looking for. And there was a good example. The example of a keyword was, I'm sorry, flowers, or like flowers to say sorry. And the trick here was that if you try to see the search volume or how many times people search for that keyword, I'm sorry, flowers, per month in Google, it was something around like 80 searches per month. So like less than 100 people in a month would search for that keyword, which means that if you rank number one at the top of Google for this keyword, you can get like 30% of the traffic. So like 20 or 30 people would visit your site, which doesn't look like a keyword that you would want to target, where you want to invest your effort. But then if you take the number one ranking page for the keyword, I'm sorry, flowers, and put it in a tool that can show you what other keywords it ranks for. Ahrefs is one of these tools. Also, SEMrush can do that. I think SpyFu also can do this. So yeah, if you put this number one ranking page into one of these tools to see what keywords it ranks for, you'll see that it ranks for all sorts of variation, like I'm sorry flowers, flowers to say sorry, which flowers will say sorry, like what flowers to buy to say sorry to my girlfriend and all that stuff. And the total search volume of all these variations, each of which is not too popular, but when you accumulate them in one, the page tends to get some nice traffic. So yeah, this is interesting. Right now, you shouldn't only look at the actual keyword, like exact match keyword, like it used to be. Right now, you should focus on the topic and see like the topic potential.
That makes sense. And then when you say sort of how people react, does that mean like somebody, you happen to get found, so you happen to have optimized for search engines, somebody found you, they end up on your site and it's just garbage and they just immediately leave and go back to Google.
Yeah.
That's what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, like there are a few rumors about the things that Google might use in their ranking algorithm. And one of these things that actually Google have denied consistently is that they look at Google Analytics data. But still, even though Google denies that they look at what happens in your Google Analytics, a lot of SEOs that I know, they prefer not to install Google Analytics on their site and use some third-party analytics software. So they still think that Google is taking some data from there. But it's not the only source. The Google Analytics code on your website is not the only source that Google can use to see how people behave on your site. Because think about it, Google Chrome, the browser that like a lot of people around the world use to browse internet, it belongs to Google. So basically, Google can track anything that happens in Google Chrome. Again, this is something they consistently denied, that they're using data from Google Chrome. But they may go out and say that, guys, right now we do. And the last thing that they can use is actually what is happening in the search results on the Google.com website specifically. So if you search for something, you can click on a website and then you can go back to search results like in a few seconds. And they can track that you didn't like the first link that you clicked. And you may have clicked another link and another, or maybe you went back to Google and refined your search, which would mean to Google that the search results for the first search query that you entered didn't make a lot of sense. So they can track. I'm not saying that they do track all these things. I'm just saying that SEOs have rumors about Google tracking these things, because when you like do SEO for a lot of websites and you track like what's happening and what might have influenced the positions of a website in Google, you kind of see, like, you kind of feel all these things with your gut feeling. So when you, like, improve your page and it answers the questions of searches better and they stick longer, it starts to rank better. So you kind of connect the dots and see that Google might really look at these behavioral factors. But yeah, again, one of the things I want to stress, that this stuff only kicks in when you rank in the top 10 search results, which means that people actually find you in Google and click on your result. And to get there, you have to create some nice content, you have to build some links, you have to promote your brand and all that stuff. So you shouldn't care about these behavioral factors too much until you rank in top 10. No, I mean, you should create your website of a high quality and have high quality content from the start. But I mean, you shouldn't bother too much about like trying to squeeze the most of it until you're in top 10.
Right. And that's a good disclaimer for it. So when you say like writing, obviously, good content that's high quality and people react to well, is this what we talk about sort of like writing like for humans to actually read, not just writing like we used to for search engines, which was try and put that keyword in there 50 times on the page?
Yeah. Yeah, this is exactly what I was saying before. So basically, like 5 years ago, there were straightforward technical tricks on what you should do with your content, how many times the keyword should appear, should it be in bold, should it be italic, should it be in H1 tag and all that stuff. Well, the interesting thing here at Ahrefs, we have studied a few million search results and we try to see if the keyword that people search for is present on the pages that rank. And it appeared that in 75% of cases that we studied, the keyword that people were looking for wasn't present on any of the page in the search results. which means that you don't necessarily even have to have your keyword anywhere on your page, like not in title, not in H1 tag, in headline. You can do without it and still rank high in Google. This is because Google is pretty smart with all these synonyms, with trying to like read your content and understand what it is about, what it is relevant for. So to answer the question, like, should you write for search engines or for humans? The answer is actually, it is almost impossible right now to write for search engines because you have to be very technical. People who are, I know that some like hardcore SEOs are really trying to figure out and reverse engineer the algorithms that Google is trying to use to kind of read your content like a human does. And they use all these like topic modeling algorithms, all these entities and all that stuff, which is pretty like hardcore technical stuff. And I will be honest, I don't understand like anything of it because we have a team for that. So yeah, it's almost impossible right now to write for the search engines. So you should just focus to writing for humans and making sure that they get a lot of value and that they get this value fast and stick on your page.
Yeah, this game of trying to, I only know like SEO for just, I mean, how to write, I guess, for a page and use the Google or the SEO plugin. But I mean, reading into SEO to find out more, and people that think that they, this blogger, can outsmart like what, 20,000 Google engineers?
Yeah.
Some of the smartest people in the world that are all working together to make the search engine just not gameable and better so that people can easily find what they want, right?
Yeah.
So,
and one other thing is that what happens on your page is something you have full control of. So it's the easiest thing to do to optimize, to game and all that stuff. And this is why Google has a little bit less influence of your content and the keywords what there than, for example, all other factors that you don't control. For example, you can't control if people are using your brand along with some keywords when searching. For example, Ahrefs is associated with like link building or backlink checking or keyword checking. So we can't control if people will put into Google like Ahrefs link building tools. And this is a signal to Google to connect our brand with these keywords and to make us rank better with these keywords. Similar, we can't control what people write about us when they link to us. So they can write, for example, Ahrefs is the best link building tool. And again, this will be a signal for Google to connect us, to connect our brand to these topics and give us like some topical authority and this and all this stuff. So I'm trying to say that all these things that you can do on your own website, they don't bring a lot of like ranking potential. What mostly helps you rank is what happens outside your website.
That makes sense, because you're right, because it can be gamed, the other stuff, easier.
Yeah.
You can game, obviously, externally, but we won't get into that because it's just kind of beyond our scope right now. But so you're writing an article for the Ahrefs blog. If keywords don't need to be in titles and on the page, what would you do when you're writing your next blog post? You want it to obviously get found and to get ranked in some way. Like,
yeah.
I'm assuming you're on WordPress. Do you guys have an SEO plugin? Do you worry about the headline, or is it more important that the headline gets noticed and shared? What is it you do?
Yeah, of course. So there's a difference between keywords don't help you to rank being on your page, like being in title or in headline or in content, when Google is looking just at your page. And there's a difference between the fact that how you frame your content so that when people read it, when people tweet it, when people share it, when people link to it, what they say. So these are different things. Yeah, the keyword, when you put it into a headline, it doesn't help much. But when people start linking to you, when people start talking about you, they will do this in a way that you frame your content. So yeah, if you want to rank, for example, for like SEO agency, of course you want to have SEO agency, like a big headline on your website, so that people that would link to you, they won't say like this marketing agency, but they would say this SEO agency specifically. So yeah, right now, putting keywords in a smart way in your title, headline, and all this on your page, it doesn't help in direct way. It helps in indirect way. So this is the thing.
I love that. I love that. I never thought of that. And so could this be included if you had like a tweetable sort of quote in your post?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty...
You can actually make it so it has a keyword in there so that hopefully if hundreds of people share it, they all share it from with that same keyword.
Yeah. 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 I think that Google might be looking again at tweets, at how people frame them, what people say. And if you get a ton of tweets, actually, it would be fun to test it. But again, it's pretty hard to test it because it's something you don't control. You can't like tell thousands of people tweet this article with these keywords. This is something that Rand Fishkin can do. And he sometimes, because he has a large Twitter following, and sometimes he does these kinds of experiments to see what will happen. Oh. But I don't think he tried to test if the keywords in the tweet will influence the ranking of a page. So let's just say we don't know if this is the fact. But yeah, since you asked, like, what do we do at Ahrefs when we publish a new article? Yeah, of course, we think carefully of a headline and we try to frame it in a way that would be in line with the keywords that we want to rank for. So that, and not just the headline, also the introduction, the few first paragraphs of the article, we also try to frame them in a way to make people link to us and talk about us in a very specific way and mention a certain topic. So yeah, this is what we think about in the first place in terms of optimizing our page.
Very, very, very smart. I mean, you have to be in one of the most competitive markets to try and rank for because it's all other SEO experts trying to get ranked.
This is true.
Everyone trying to do tests and I've heard that tweets and stuff don't have as much relevancy or strength behind them because, I mean, you can have hundreds of or thousands of Twitter accounts if you wanted.
Yeah.
And with bots and stuff that
you
can easily, well, not easy, but it's easier to game that than it is to have 1,000 websites all writing about you. So it seems to be a lot of talk about trying to understand where Google is sort of heading. And always to try and stay at least equivalent, like with them, or else ahead of them a little bit. And I mean, it gets into sort of gaming SEO and making it work for you. But do, like as a broad sort of thing, like do short-term SEO sort of tricks exist and work?
Speaking of short-term SEO tricks, we need to clear the definition. Are these the tricks that work only for a short period of time or the tricks that will get you to the top in a short period of time?
Right. I guess it's trying to get to the top in a short period of time.
Trying to get to the top.
And hopefully not get you penalized and removed completely.
Well, just recently we published a research at Ahrefs blog. We tried to study to find the answer to the long question, how long does it take to rank? Because people were asking this question for years. And what we did is basically we took 2 million pages that were created about a year ago, that were first seen by Ahrefs crawlers a year ago. And we studied how many of them ranked in Google for at least one keyword, any keyword that we know of that Ahrefs tracks. So basically what we found that only 5.7% of 2 million pages that were created a year ago ranked in top 10 within about a year. So most pages just simply flop. Most published pages never rank for anything.
Wow.
And out of this 5.7%, they ranked mostly in 2 to 3 months. The most of them ranked in top 10 in 2 to 3 months. But there were also articles, there were also pages that ranked in about a week, and there were also pages that ranked in more than a year, that took them more than a year to rank. So yeah, definitely there are things that can get you to the top super quick, like in a week. But for the most part, you should aim to rank within like 3, 2, 3, 4 months, depend. And again, like I said in the beginning of this podcast, there are a lot of it depends here. So speaking about the short-term SEO tricks, I'd say that the short-term SEO trick is to like send a lot of traffic to your page. This is what I've seen work for Ahrefs specifically. Whenever like for the most part, when we publish an article on our blog, I will see it ranking in at least top 20 in about a month, not sooner than a month. And then it will slowly crawl to the top 10 and maybe to the top 5 if we're lucky. But as soon as one of our articles goes like viral, as soon as it gets retweeted like crazy, as soon as people start sharing it on Facebook and it gets like a ton of traffic, a huge traffic spike, we see that it can rank in less than 24 hours, rank at top of Google. And actually, the interesting thing that our research of how long does it take to rank in Google, it went kind of viral. And so basically, this article ranked in Google in less than 24 hours. So article which was basically telling people that it takes 3 to 4 months to rank in general, it ranked in less than a day. So yeah, the short-term SEO trick is to send a lot of traffic. But again, since Google is pretty smart with behavioral factors, if the traffic won't stick, that won't work. So I'm pretty sure that Google monitors, like, if a lot of people visit your page, how they behave. Do they stick? Do they read your content? Do they visit other pages on your site? Or do they just open your page and then close it because they were brought to this page by some like gray hat SEO trick? So this is the short-term SEO trick that I know.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. And I mean, that obviously is dependent on the fact that, I mean, Ahrefs has a massive audience and a massive amount of traffic at this point.
Not that we have a massive audience. I'd say that we have a nice reach in the SEO community because a lot of like influential people follow us, read us, and they have audience of their own. So the reach is quite good. And we have some authority on the topic. So for example, if 5 years ago when I wasn't working at Ahrefs, I would publish my own article about how long does it take to rank in Google, it won't go viral because, one, I don't have this kind of very niche audience. And secondly, I don't have the data and authority to speak about this topic. So one of the things why the article was picked up is because we have the authority and we have the data to talk about this topic.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And it's, you've obviously deserved the like to have that sort of authority because put on you because it's well deserved and you obviously have the data and the experience.
Yeah.
So let's talk as like an entrepreneur starting a new website this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like say an e-commerce business and we've decided that we're going to sell like a physical product from the site, but to get traffic we're going to use content and SEO.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to set up a blog. What is it that, are there any sort of things that we, like a must-do sort of SEO steps that we need for setting up our WordPress site sort of at the beginning? I mean, you don't have to go through every step because we know, I think, the general of what we should set up and how we should tag our site. But for just starting to write content, and it's, although I appreciate you saying like we don't have to write 4 keywords anymore, it also kind of like, well, what do we write? Like to start building that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Could you just sort of maybe help us out with thinking about an e-commerce site?
Yeah. Like, do you want me to talk about e-commerce site like in general or just the blog of an e-commerce site?
Both, if you can do it. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be great.
So basically, let's imagine that I myself was starting an e-commerce site right now, completely from the scratch. One of the first things that I would do is I would do great product descriptions and great category descriptions. So I would make sure that each product page and each category page has a nice description, has nice photos, and has nice user experience. So when people land on my site, they instantly see that this is a quality online store, that it's not some kind of website built by, I don't know, 5-year-old,
yeah,
just to take your credit card information and steal it. So yeah, these are the first things. And why I'm talking about great product descriptions is because I see that a lot of e-commerce stores, they don't put enough time into describing their products from all angles and trying to like cover the topic, exhaustively cover the topic. And this will also give you a lot of long tail SEO traffic because people, like I illustrated before, people search for things in all sorts of peculiar ways. And if you have a good product description that describes your product from almost any angle and from almost any use case and answers any potential questions that users may have, you have a high chance that this product description will be found for these search queries, like uncommon search queries that people put. And this is your only chance, because when you start a new e-commerce site, you can go after like big keywords, for example, wireless headphones, because they are already coined by like big brands, large sites. So you have to hope for like longer tail keywords, like which are the best wireless headphones for, I don't know, for running in the wild, like something like this. I don't know. Yeah.
Good example.
Yeah. And the next thing, once I have good descriptions of my products, good pictures of my products, and good descriptions of my categories, I would make sure that the site structure is good. This is something that is kind of hard to do if you're new to SEO. So I would actually hire some kind of consultant to walk me through like what should be indexed, what should not be indexed. Like, do we want to open tags of products to Google to index, or do we only want Google to see the product pages and category pages? How we should interlink our pages, how we should interlink our categories. This is something that you want to actually consult with an SEO expert, because depending on the size and the structure, the complexity of structure of your website, you may do it yourself if your website is small and the structure is not that hard. Or if you're going to create a big e-commerce store, you might want to hire a professional to look at your site and identify all the issues. And then once you have all that in place, you have to get links, right? And people actually rarely link to the product pages. So this is an issue. I can't really remember myself linking a lot to product pages. I would rather link to content. So if I were starting an e-commerce store, I would definitely create a blog in order to attract links. And again, in order to publish even more content for people who are in the early stage of their buying journey. So for example, again, back to that example of wireless headphones for running in the wild, someone might be right now researching about running in the wild. So I would have an article about that. And then he would realize that running without music might be boring for him personally, and he would pick some wireless headphones. So things like this, yeah, I would publish some quality content around my products to target the buyers in their early stage of figuring out what kind of products they need. And of course, I would try to create some so-called linkable assets. Linkable assets, I think they are totally big for e-commerce stores. Because essentially, linkable asset is a page on your website that has some super valuable content, that has some utility, which is specifically targeted at your target audience to give a lot of value for them and therefore attract a lot of links, as your target audience will share this linkable asset with each other. So example of a good linkable asset that I've seen, I'm a great water sports fan. I love wakeboarding. So At some point, I was picking a new wakeboard for myself, and I was looking for the right size for my weight and height. And so basically, I found a great article on which was published on the store that was selling equipment for wakeboarding. And it was basically walking me through all the steps that I need to do in order to identify which wakeboard is right for me. So basically, it was kind of how to pick your wakeboard guide, all-in-one guide. So yeah, these things work very well. At other website, which was selling like winter clothes, there was an article about all these technologies that are used in coats today. Like, can it breathe? Like, how does it react to water? How does it react to cold? Like, and all that stuff. So there were descriptions of all these markings that you see on a code, but don't necessarily understand what it means and how it works. So yeah, these are the things that people will then reference, that people will share with one another. And these pages will attract a lot of links to your website. And from that page, you can then link to your categories, and the so-called link juice will go from your linkable asset and then to categories and then to your product pages. Because think about it, if you're trying to rank the product pages, you're in the same situation as everyone else because everyone is struggling to get links to their product specifically. So the workaround is to create content, to create linkable assets that helps people, that people will reference, that people will link to, and then you funnel all these link juice, all this authority that you get from links to your content, to the product pages and to the category pages, and so they start ranking too.
Wow, I love it. So linkable assets, I mean, in the marketing business sort of space online, we use like infographics.
Yeah, this is one of the examples, yeah.
But you're talking about like yours with the wakeboard. I mean, it's really just a truly valuable thing for anybody buying a wakeboard from anywhere.
Exactly.
Would use, and so everybody will link to that, and you're not selling your product at that point, but they're going to find your product from that because it'll be linked at the bottom to your product page.
Sure. Yeah.
I love it. So the first thing you do would be to create the great product and category descriptions, then focus on your site structure, and you're going to hire an SEO consultant to do that. And since people rarely ever want to link to a product page, which makes sense, why would they just want to, it's boring.
Yeah.
Create blog posts or a blog that can attract the links. And then in addition to that, linkable assets, which will then link back to your category pages, which will then have all your products and product pages.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. So the one thing...
Yeah, this is actually, maybe it might sound simple to some people, but actually there's a ton of work there, especially if you're entering a market where there are already some sites that have great content and that have linkable assets. Because if you enter this kind of space, you have to jump over your head to create something that would be more attractive than what they already have.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's definitely a lot of work, but to have that sort of mapped out for you there is, it's excellent. It's excellent.
Yeah.
The one thing I think people will get hung up on here, Tim, is this idea of hiring an SEO consultant or expert, as you said. So if I don't know anything about SEO, how do I know, like, how can I make sure that I'm choosing someone who really knows about SEO and isn't going to do stuff that could potentially get me like banned from Google?
I wouldn't worry that much about doing stuff that would potentially get you banned because it's pretty hard to do unless you're like trying to specifically do some gray SEO tricks and you know that this is gray hat. I would instead worry more about an SEO specialist who wouldn't do much stuff but charge you like he's a big SEO agency. Because like I had some friends who asked me for advice about their websites and they shared the experience of how they were trying to hire a freelance SEO or SEO agency and their rates. And basically they forwarded me the emails of their communication with these guys. And what I saw there is that these, I don't know, freelance guys or SEO agencies, basically they were using some automated software like Ahrefs, for example, to generate a few reports about their website and present it as if it is something like super hard to do and therefore should cost like a ton of money. Where actually my friends could just sign up for these softwares like Ahrefs, Moz, SEMrush, and etc. and analyze their websites the same way as these SEO experts. So yeah, when hiring an SEO expert, my advice would be to ask them about the sites that they worked with before, about the results that they got for these sites, about like how they did it. Like, it's not a problem to ask SEO, like, what are you going to do and how you're going to do it? Because if he won't answer you, the guy is sketchy. It's not, like I said, SEO, there's no much secrets in SEO. Like, it's pretty straightforward. So it's not about knowing some secretive tricks. It's about doing the work. And in terms of technical SEO, when you need to work with the structure of your website, you have to know all this like HTXS stuff, robots.txt stuff, what you should know, follow, do follow, no index, and all this stuff. And basically, when hiring a guy to work with your website structure, I would just ask him for his previous clients and maybe send an email to these clients and ask them about their experience. Like, did it work? Like, what were the results? And did they enjoy working with this guy? And stuff like this. So yeah, I wouldn't just rely on my interview with the guy. I would for sure ask about previous clients and get in touch with them and ask them if they got any results and are they happy with how he worked or how the agency worked.
Excellent, excellent. I mean, that's great advice, because if the problem with worrying about just asking the right questions is that we don't know enough about SEO to know if they're telling us the truth. So follow up, ask for references, and then follow up with one or two references. That's
exactly
great advice. Great advice. And I like the idea of not having to worry about getting like de-indexed by Google. It's pretty hard to do, I guess.
Yeah, actually, you have to worry about it, because there are some agencies that rely on gray hat tricks when they rank websites. So basically, they have all these private blog networks and all these sketchy ways to get links fast and cheap, which basically can rank you fast. But then Google might change something in their algorithm to figure out better when the links are sketchy and therefore penalize you. Google is trying hard to not penalize your site and instead just devalue the bad links. But still, if you're aggressive with it, Google might just punish you. So yeah, again, when talking to an SEO freelancer or SEO agency, you must ask them a question. If you're hiring them not for technical optimization of your site and your site structure, but specifically for link building, you must ask them this question, like, how are you going to get links to our website? If they will say something like, we'll use a tool like Ahrefs, Majestic to see where the links of your competitors are coming from, and try to replicate these links, or try to figure out similar ways to attract links in the ways that they do, or work with journalists and publications to make them write about you. This stuff is legit. But if they will say, okay, we have some like secretive ways to build citations to like submit you to directories and all that stuff, or if they will simply say that we can't answer this question, just look at the results, this is super sketchy. So I wouldn't suggest anyone to use any kinds of sketchy link building strategies, because no one wants to risk their business, right? For example, here at Ahrefs, we have quite a few juicy keywords that we would love to rank for on the first spot. And I know a ton of people who have access to like private blog networks, like really quality private blog networks that Google still can't identify, and they work like a charm. But we would never risk the whole Ahrefs business on a few of these sketchy links, because we might get a short-term win right now, but next day, if Google finds it out and penalizes our site, we'll lose a ton of money. So it's just not worth it, and we're not using any sketchy link building techniques. We only rely on earning links and getting them naturally.
Nice. I love it. I love it. So this has been an absolute blast, Tim.
Thanks.
I thank you so much for sharing so openly with us and so much. Can you maybe take a moment or two to just tell the listener about Ahrefs and what it can kind of do to help them sort of working and with SEO and their sites?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for letting me do that. Well, basically, Ahrefs is a company that collects and processes data. So we crawled the whole internet, and quite recently we found a nice study by some company, I don't remember the name, but basically they looked at the existing web crawlers of different search engines and different private companies that crawl the web. And it turned out that Ahrefs has the second best crawler after Google. Oh. So yeah, we crawl like four times less than Google, but still we're number one behind them. So we crawl better than Bing, Yahoo, Yandex, and all these guys, which was impressive even for us. We didn't know that we crawl more than these guys. So yeah, basically what Ahrefs does, we collect data about websites, who links to you, who links to your competitors, how they translate into your domain authority. We also track the keywords that websites rank for. So basically you can put website of your competitor into Ahrefs and see all the keywords that they rank for. And the same with content. We have tools for analyzing content. So you put any topic and we will return the content that generated tons of social shares or tons of backlinks or generates tons of traffic from Google. So basically Ahrefs is a toolkit based on tons of data. We have like hundreds of servers and our customers' tools to work with this data and to make better marketing and SEO decisions out of this data that they see about themselves and about their competitors.
Nice. I love it. And they can find it where?
Ahrefs.com. It's hard to spell. The first letter is A, the second is H, and then refs. It's like part of HTML tag of a backlink. Ahrefs.com.
That's where it comes from, the backlink. yes. So Ahrefs.com.
Yeah.
The site, there's a 14-day free trial. You can try it for absolutely for free. If you have been blogging or have a existing e-commerce or blog now, you can just put in your domain and see where it's working, where it can get better already, and then see if Ahrefs can help you further and take it beyond the 14 days if you wish.
Exactly. Thanks.
All right, Tim. Again, thank you so much. I'm glad that I finally got a chance to sit down with you and learn kind of what entrepreneurs need to know about SEO in 2017. And thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Sure. Thank you a lot. I hope that listeners got some nice ideas from our conversation. And if someone needs some more advice, just sign up for Ahrefs and you'll see my email there. Email me any questions. I'll try to help.
Very cool. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks.
I'm going to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, ActiveCampaign. ActiveCampaign enables you to perfectly send timed messages in response to your customers' actions and behaviors. It allows you to treat your contacts as unique individuals rather than sending everyone the same boring message. See why thousands are upgrading to a more intelligent marketing solution, myself included. Sign up for a free 14-day free trial right now, no credit card needed. Visit activecampaign.com/hack to get started today. I don't know about you, but I'm really digging these going deep episodes. They're fun. I'm using them in somewhat of a selfish way because I'm getting to talk to experts who can help me sort of further the goals that I'm setting for myself. This quarter's goal for Hack the Entrepreneur is sort of structuring the site and going really into writing for the blog and providing great content for you there. And so getting to talk to Tim, an expert in SEO, was fun. And I also had a lot of questions that I wanted to ask for my own purposes that I know will help you as well. So I hope you're digging them as much as I am. Drop me a note like on Twitter or drop me an email if you wish and tell me if there's any other topics you'd like to hear covered. There's a lot of smart people out there that could probably help you kind of scale your business to where you want to if there's just the right questions you could go deep on. So yeah, let me know. I'd be happy to reach out and get some other people going because I think I'm going to keep these going deep because they seem to be enjoyable. And your feedback seems to be that you're really digging them as well. So yeah, it's been fun. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the site. You can head over there. Check out the blog, HackTheEntrepreneur.com/blog. See, been writing at least once a week over there. And then every Monday, there's a new article coming out. And then also on Wednesdays, there's a new text-based interview series I'm doing called How I Started. I've interviewed two people already on there. They answer 21 questions just about how they started their business, where the ideas came from, how they got their first customers, what they use for tools, what they use for email, that kind of stuff. But check it out. It's called How I Started and it's on the blog. I think you'll dig it. All right. It's been fun. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really, truly do appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.